Do you think about what you eat or feel about what you eat? How much food can change our mood or desires? Today I'm on Radio Gorgeous Red Sofa with a writer who has written and published over 5 novels, written 2 non-fiction books and numerous short stories, plays, poems, film scripts, articles and book reviews. She is Lana Citron, originally from Dublin, but now she lives in London, and we're talking about her latest book, Edible Pleasures, a textbook for aphrodisiacs. Hi, Lana. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi. Very nice to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
So can you tell us exactly what your book's about?
It is about the relationship between food and sex.
Wow.
And how, and desire as well, yeah. And how it is a universal, a cultural and historical relationship. It spans centuries, cultures, countries, that this relationship exists.
Amazing. So, yes, can you tell us, what is the link with food and sex? What is it? Is it to do with, is it an oral link? Is it senses?
Well, that's really interesting because it's different links, but it's all about reproduction. So the food gives us earth. And the earth gives us food, okay? The earth gives us food, and we have to reproduce. That's
the basic thing.
For, in relation to the relationship between this, it spans a whole spectrum. So food and desire are intertwined, and it comes back. Freud actually said that there is a neuroticism, a link between when you see a baby suckle at a mother's breast, and it's reminiscent of the desire between two adults, sexual desire, and you see the baby fall off the breast completely satiated, okay? And that is true to an extent, although when we begin to kiss someone else, usually the desire continues as adults, and it becomes greater, obviously. And another psychologist, Adam Phillips, Freud says this is aim-inhibited kissing, like suckling. Mm-hmm. And he turns it on its head and said, well, you could say that any time we eat, it's like aim-inhibited kissing. Mm-hmm. And I was I was drawn to the subject through the kiss, because I had written a book about the kiss. And I was like, oh, aim inhibited kissing. What? That's just the most amazing idea, because that would mean that everything I ate, every morsel that I put in my mouth was like a kiss, right? So that I would smother my toast in kisses. I would fill my glass with kisses and slake my thirst. I was just mesmerized by this concept, and I fell in love with it, and I thought, oh yeah, our edible pleasure. And that's how I became, I guess, interested in the topic of aphrodisiacs.
I thought it was really interesting because you said that the word kiss means, was it smell or food?
Yes.
In other cultures?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So in Indian cultures, I think, and in Inuit cultures, well, it's called, they smell each other. They actually smell each other.
Because I remember when you were little, you say, oh, people, they rub noses,
yes,
you know, Inuits
exactly.
Rub noses.
Yes.
So is that the same sort of
thing?
That's
exactly what I'm talking about.
So they're sniffing each other.
They are sniffing each other out. And if you look at the kiss, it is the only physical gesture in which two people use all their senses. It's the most intimate gesture there is, because you engage all your senses: touch, taste, smell, sight. Okay, and that doesn't happen when you have sex. It is more intimate than actually having sex.
Also, because it's your face, isn't
it?
So your brains, your smell,
against each other.
Yeah.
And and of course, traditionally, prostitutes
don't
kiss.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I don't blame them.
And then it's the same with eating. We touch it, we taste it, we smell it, we see it. It's reminiscent of a kiss.
Yeah. It's really, really fascinating. So how is your book set out then? Because it's like, how the hell do you start on the subject?
I have divided the book into three parts. So the first part is on how an appetite is formed. And that looks at how and why food and desire have become so intertwined throughout the ages. And then on the etiquette of eating. So all the things that go into making a meal.
So the rituals
from just thinking about how to lay out, how to make a room, how to set the room, how what kind of food you are going to present, is there music playing in the background, how you go, you know, all these sorts of.
And do you think there's
elements.
Always seduction in that?
Oh, definitely. I think eating is foreplay.
Wow.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I think it's. It's a huge, huge factor in
seduction. So it's probably why people over centuries have said, would you like to go out for dinner? You know?
Yeah, totally. But eating, actually, there was a research done quite recently about how people have got out of the habit of eating together and how it's actually can be depressing or a factor of depression that you eat on your own and that it's...
My daughter often says, oh, mummy, you around? You know, she doesn't want to have, like, dinner or lunch on her own, you know. She says, mummy, are you around? So she just wants to do it with me. I think there's something humanizing about it, isn't there?
Completely. Mm. And actually, it's necessary. We are social animals and we need each other. And one of the things we do well together is eat.
Well, think about there's not many other things we can all, you know, food is saying we all have to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And and it is a necessity. So make it into a pleasure, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, every religion does it. Every culture has, you know, from every single culture. It's a ritual. You know, there's rituals,
and
eating rituals.
I found it very interesting when I've got a link with Italy because I've got a house there. And I'd never thought of a concept before, but food is love. And that's what they believe there. You know, I don't know whether I don't think in the UK it's in our psyche, but, you know, I'd say it's more sensual here. Or it's more about different tastes. I think in Britain we're really into different culture, eating culturally different food, which makes us more interesting in that way. Got a kind of open palate. But I'd say there, for them, they said you can never joke about food. Children and food are sacrilege, they were telling me there. And I thought that's probably because food was so precious because at one point they were so poor, you know. And also mama and feeding, you know, it's all linked.
It's all about
family.
It's all about being together, conviviality. Communicating with each other. Definitely in my background, food was love. Love was food. Like
Lovely.
Comfort eating. What about? I mean, it can go the wrong way as well. when we comfort eat and stuff. But when you think like food and language, so you have like the honeymoon. You know, everything goes. Everything is linked. It's really interesting how it crosses so many different parts of culture. How food is so crucial. Yeah.
So what do your book? So the first chapter is about the senses.
Let's go back. On the etiquette of eating, and also the differences between why men use aphrodisiacs and why women use aphrodisiacs. Historically, men are obviously much more concerned about libido and about the size of their manhood, and then women are much more focused on fecundity and on maybe entrapping a man.
Yes.
So even if you look at like the humble gingerbread man, that was like you know, fashioned as in the form of the one of your sweetheart, and you would have, like, maybe say a little spell or whatever, and then give it to him, and hopefully he would.
I will never think of when I'll never think of a gingerbread man in the same way again.
Really? Well, there's worse. There's more bizarre.
Tell us some more entrapments.
Okay,
we're mostly women listeners, and we you know, some of us want to trap men.
Okay. So the more, I don't know if it's crude, but in Brazil, there's a practice whereby when you make coffee, you strain it through your undergarments so that your secretions, bodily secretions, become part of the coffee, and then you will serve that coffee to your intended.
Well, again, it's aromas. I mean, we all love the smell of coffee, and it's like you're already thinking, sniffing this. Ooh, there's another smell in there.
Yeah, exactly. It's very interesting. Yeah, and then there was another one whereby, and I think this was in the 18th century, whereby women, and I know it happened in Britain, as far as I can remember, where they would put pieces of apples under their armpits, and again their body odors would become part, you know, be absorbed into the pulp.
Well, this does worry me that nowadays we're so clean, you know, and we spray our spells and everything, but are we really smelling each other? Also read an interesting article. Apparently, if you're on the pill, you're attracted, your smell changes.
Exactly.
Did you read that this week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
so you could be attracted to someone who you're not meant to be attracted to.
Yeah, totally.
Because you're meant to have it, you're meant to go for the opposite DNA, aren't you?
Exactly.
So that you don't have kind of weird children.
Exactly.
So I think it's, I mean, in fact, someone said to me last night, he said, I'm going around this party asking women what their favourite smell is. He said, what's yours? And I said, men's armpits. And he went, oh, my God. And he said, that's the most interesting answer I've had. Most people have said mown grass and lemons. and I said, no, it's just there's something kind of sex, you know, I can feel myself getting slightly turned on even saying it, but something kind of animal about it, you know.
Well, it's like for truffles.
Yeah, yeah. Now, why are they
musky.
Earthy? Why?
It's a musky smell. Mm. It's, I suppose, reminiscent of testosterone, but there is, that earthy, I think, cashmere and cigar smoke. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyway, but yes, it's very interesting what you said about smell, because when the Kiss book came out, I would do lots of readings to young women, okay, and I would go, I would just go on about the Kiss and say how sublime and potent a gesture it is, and when you actually have a kiss whereby you're, you know, the knee buckler, you know, when you're completely, oh my God,
You sort of lose yourself, don't you?
You
just become at your mouth, you know. It's like you lose every other part
exactly.
of your body,
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they looked at me blankly. And I would go on and talk about this Swiss scientist, Klaus Wittekind, and he had done this test and tested out women's smells, and that those who are on the pill, that scent is suppressed completely because, as you said, when you're on the pill, your body thinks you're pregnant and you want to be protected and you want to be secure. So you seek out people with like the same DNA, because it's family, basically.
Wow.
And
so it's dangerous. So get off the pill if you want
pill,
to find the right mate.
But also, I do think people have forgotten how to smell or how to use their instincts.
If you're covered in Shaw and Yves Saint Laurent perfume, you're not going to really smell the person, are you?
No. Yeah. And they've forgotten how to, or just even trusting one's instinct.
Even though the smell of Eau Sauvage literally turns me on as well, because it reminds me I had this boyfriend who I had very, very hot sex with, and I bought him Eau Sauvage, so now the smell just really, like... In fact, the trouble is my son bought it, and I was like, don't come near, don't come near.
I don't know this.
What smell turns you on, darling?
Oh, I think what you said... my boyfriend's armpit.
I've got her all giggling now. Yeah, it's fantastic. So now let's get on to the actual aphrodisiacs.
That's part two.
So
part two of the book, so we're now on part two, is a compilation of aphrodisiacs, okay? So
it's like kind of the A to Z of them, isn't it?
Yes, it's like an A to Z, and it goes from like the humdrum ordinary aphrodisiacs all the way through to the most disgusting, deplorable, vile.
Oh, we want to know. Tell us some humdrum. I'd love some humdrum everyday ones we can take just to keep us going.
Well, you know how people think of aphrodisiacs and think you have to spend fortune. Yeah, it has like caviar, yeah, and it has to be oysters. Well, actually, milk is an aphrodisiac. Okay.
And any taken in what form? Anything particular?
Well, in all different types of form, but according to more Eastern cultures, so milk or butter or ghee. So they're in
that makes sense. They're
eggs. Egg is all types of eggs. It's the most potent symbol of fertility.
Right? That's why we have Easter eggs. Yeah.
Then you have bread. So you have the phallic baguette, you know. And then historically, even in ancient Roman times, they had special prostitutes who would knead the bread into different forms of shapes.
Dildos.
Genitalia.
So they'd entice them in. Come in and try my bread and something else.
and then there was some German bishop who was chastising his congregation because there was a practice in Worms, this was hundreds of years ago, whereby women would offer up their nude nates and the man would knead upon their nude nates the dough and hopefully get aroused. Wow. Well, it's like a massage, isn't it? Yeah. It's really anyway. So and then the more humdrum quite everything, basically everything in has been at one time designated or claimed to have an aphrodisiac quality. So especially things that would have been exotic, that it would have come over to Europe years and years ago, or vice versa. So
herbs and spices.
And spices changed the way we eat completely when Marco Polo, they used to be the most expensive, you know, they'd be as expensive as gold or, you know, their value.
What, things like cinnamon?
Pepper, wow. Ginger, all spices. Mm. And then you have, bananas, foods that look, you know, bananas, asparagus, you know, cucumbers, you know, all those would be kind of deemed more kind of humdrum.
I'm thinking now of those sort of 16th century sort of artists that just do piles of food, those lovely oil paintings.
Yes. Wonderful.
Actually, I've never thought, but they're quite erotic, aren't they?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. There is a huge, huge subculture, I don't know, of food porn. I don't know if you've come across it. And it is.
Look, you're licking your lips, though, aren't you, Lana? Tell us about it, because I find the food sexy.
Well, I'm shocked.
Oh, you're shocked. That's a good sign. What have you seen then that's shocked you?
Well, it's really,
don't worry, because it's X-rated. We're going to put a star on this so no children will listen.
Well, it's kind of the eroticism of food. Mm. And then you have people's interplay with food. And this is beautiful images. Mm. So I do my Instagram 365 aphrodisiacs, and you can see some beautiful images. But then actually with food porn, it's actually about the pornification of food. So you have dripping burgers it's quite an it's incredible.
What, a dripping burger onto a body?
Just actually the food itself.
Oh, it looks like it's all about the sexual organ.
But it's like an impotent desire, isn't it? Because it's like your relationship, you know, for like comfort eating in the extreme. You've kind of... Anyway, so that's
but
not
really
what
it's quite
weird
eat a penis, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there's we have chocolate willies.
Yeah, yeah.
All those,
I've never known what people do with those,
No, I've never actually had one.
No. I mean, I've seen people in sort of, I don't know.
Don't want to give too much away.
Exactly. It was a lot of giggling going on there. Yeah. Tell us, you told us some humdrum aphrodisiacs. Please, can you tell us the most shocking aphrodisiacs? Okay.
Well, did you ever see The Cook, the Thief, the Wife?
Yes,
I
did.
What an incredible film that is, okay? And it ends up in the wife forcing Michael, her husband, to eat her lover. And she goes, "You've killed him, so eat him." And and he's presented, if you can remember The Banquet Table.
I remember the table, I'm going to watch it again.
So lavish. Mm. And it's like a body that has been roasted. Oh. Actually, it's just reminded me. I did a performance many years ago at a food festival, and this woman had baked a cake in the shape of a body and iced it, and she was an artist, so it looked like a body.
So it looked quite real.
Quite real, and I found it so disturbing when people would
eat it.
Yeah.
I suppose that is the last taboo, though, isn't it, really? You know, human flesh.
So that would
Only in complete desperate, you know, absolute desperation would you eat a human.
Well, I mean, there is that thing of, Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
You know, there is that kind of eroticism, you know, even when he goes, undeniably.
Yeah. And people say, when people even talking about a little child, they go, oh, he's so adorable, I could eat him, you know, no, there is something about, licking as well, and
tasting. We lick each other, we taste each other, we gorge, we devour each other, we hunger for love. Yeah. You know,
the words, really
interesting. Anyway, but so there's that, there's like eating excrement, there's like a really fetishized, disgusting, ugh. Anyway. Oh. Then with animals, there was one practice called avisotomy. Mm-hmm. And that's where you literally goose the goose.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And what country is this done in? What country? Is it all European or?
No, this is Japan.
Okay. Gosh.
So disgusting.
Yeah. But I suppose people have always, you know, people have always said people have been doing it with sheep for years and, you know, especially men, lonely societies, shepherds and things. You know, it's like there's nowhere else to go.
So I think there is a correlation between danger and, you know, pushing boundaries. Well, lust and sexual practices and pushing boundaries. And I think that exists with food as well. So you push yourself that little bit further. So you want to eat poison or, you know, poison yourself. You know, people have eaten arsenic or all these kind of herbs.
And also now on the TV, there's these programs where it's how much you can eat. You know, I don't know what the name of them is, but my son and daughter watch them, but it's sort of like these.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yeah.
But it's all linked together.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it's
Disgusting. Excess as well, isn't it? Because it's sensuality, excess, you know. So through the last chapter is recipes, isn't it? But the whole book is sprinkled with recipes.
Yes, it is.
Can you tell us a recipe which you've tried and you think's worked?
Ooh. Well, this isn't a recipe that's in the book. But this is when I was thinking about what, you know, very simple food that I've fallen in love over. And it was white bait and scrambled eggs.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
You couldn't get really more potent than that. Mm. White bait, tiny, tiny little white bait. And then you have your eggs. It was like male and female. I don't even know if my ex-partner had consciously thought of that, but and it was just very simple, and again, like, the atmosphere was so conducive to the fall of
lovely. So tell us a recipe in the book then,
okay,
that you think's a good one.
Ooh, well, I have a Tulkin's hash cookies. Yeah. I also have Toulouse-Lautrec's nun's farts, which is very funny.
Tell us that.
I think it's like a beignet or like a kind of a donut.
Yeah.
And it's a specific shape, I think. But very, very cute. I've got some nice... I've Madame Pompadour's ice cream. Mm. I have chef's hot chocolate salty balls. So I have like recipes from courtesans, from ancient Roman times, where they loved stuffing one animal into another animal into another animal.
Yeah. And they love stuffed dormice with honey.
All these kind of things, down to caviar, to the futurists. to one meal, which was just made up of smells, actually.
So that's interesting.
Platters would be presented, platters of different flowers would be presented.
Wonderful. I really like that idea.
Yeah.
Actually, think about it. I've never a tasting menu, you get hardly any food, but it's
exactly.
You get a lot of drink. That's the problem with it. You end up very drunk and not eating much. Mm. And I'm always starving at the end of the night. But if I next time I go on one, I'm going to think, I'm going to consciously think about the smell more. Oh, also, the thing about smell and food, I had sinusitis last year and I could not taste because I lost my sense of smell.
Well, apparently people can fall into huge depressions once they've lost their sense of a smell and taste. Because it means so much to us.
Yes.
It's, so
it's everything, really, isn't
subliminal
it?
Subliminal levels.
Yeah.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
And actually, you can smell people who are a bit off.
Wow. Yeah. What do you mean? Ill or...
Yeah.
Well, think about it. Dogs can now smell cancer, can't they?
Yeah.
Mm. Another thing someone saw, I'll never forget when I was pregnant and I didn't know I was.
Yeah.
And someone saw it. They said, I saw it and smelt it on you.
Oh,
that was incredible.
When I was pregnant, my sense of smell went
ballistic.
I just remember I had to get off the tube a few times.
The other thing was you could smell horrible things. I could smell bins from like 200 yards away and things like that. But I think that's literally your body protecting yourself from eating poison or eating dangerous things.
Isn't it just wonderful?
Yeah. And also when you really are hungry. I remember my husband did this kind of, does 5-2, so he's like always starving. And he says he could, you can smell things, you become a bit more like a kind of dog. You can smell like a restaurant down the road, or he goes past a bakery, you can really smell it, you know.
That's lovely.
I think we should really be much more aware of our senses. And I think the only way to be really aware of everything is to go and buy your book. Don't you agree?
I couldn't agree more.
It's an absolutely wonderful book. It's a really brilliant Christmas present. What came at Christmas of someone that you love, fancy or, you know, adore. I wouldn't give it to your mother. It's a bit too sexy. But you could give it to anybody else. So this is, it's called Edible Pleasures by Lana Citron. And it's published by...
Eyewear.
How do you spell that?
E-Y-E-W-E-A-R.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. It's been an amazing experience. Can you just tell us one more aphrodisiac just to get us going?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you can't beat caviar, vodka. I can't beat. Okay, if anyone is...
Yeah. How do you take your caviar?
Iced vodka.
How do you take your caviar?
Iced caviar, just off a little ivory spoon.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming to Radio Gorgeous.
Absolute
You've got me completely
pleasure.
Starving.
Good.
And for more amazing women, go to radiogorgeous.com. Thanks for listening.